So what we're going to run through today is we're really going to talk about, we're going to finish off some architectural design decisions that you need to think about when you're creating your clusters and design for the Cloud OS. We're then going to go into the System Center product. So we're going to start looking at System Center Virtual Machine Manager. We're going to go through the back end of how Windows Azure Pack is configured. We're also then going to go into Operations Manager and Orchestrator so that we can go through in a bit more detail the automation as well as the monitoring capabilities of the stack. So technical architecture. We're going to run through design patterns that you need to think about, different scenarios and concepts that you need to make sure that you've incorporated and included in the process, as well as some of the management and around storage and network capabilities that we have in the System Center suite, as well as in the hypervisor. So some of the key requirements that are going to influence your decisions when you're doing your designing, the big ones are going to be cost. All right? I've had customers that come to us and say, I want 5 9s. We ship them the design and we go, well, this is what the server count's going to look like. This is what the storage is going to have to be. This is what your network's going to have to look like. And normally we get an email back saying, yeah, no, we don't really want 5 9s now.
Three's good enough.
Three's good enough. So realistically, you need to be realistic with your approach. If you do need 5 9s, expect that you're going to have a lot of redundancies built into that scenario. We also need to take into account your scalability. How quickly do you want to be able to scale? Do you want to have enough resources that you can take a 20 to 30% process of having 20 to 30% of your resources sitting there idle? Okay? A lot of service providers like to run at 90, 80% utilization of their resources, okay? But you run a big risk. As soon as you turn on automation, okay, as soon as you give your end customers the ability to provision for themselves, you have no control over your scale-out capability. Okay, as soon as you say to a customer, yep, here's a web portal, you can create your own VMs, you can create your own storage, you can create your own networks, all of a sudden, what happens? They go, great. I've just gone and created 20 VMs. Awesome. And then the next customer goes to create some. You're out of disk. You're out of a CPU or RAM because you haven't planned and expected that in the first 2 days of you being live, you've just had customers go and create 60 to 100 VMs. Okay? You really need to take into account when you do your designs, how much capacity are you willing to have in reserve? And what are you going to do if customers all of a sudden start automating their processes and deploying lots of resources that you weren't expecting? So you need to have some sort of backup plan there. Are you going to limit the capacity that you give customers at the start so that you've always got reserves and you can keep ahead of them? Or are you going to have to order a heap of stock of hardware and have it sitting there doing nothing until just in case? Productive management, one of the key areas you need to think about also is your management of this environment. Have you got the skill set in your team to be able to manage using the new technologies? What's the cost going to be to upskill your current team to the correct level of technology knowledge that they need to manage and maintain the environments? We're also talking about storage solutions. We ran through a heap of them yesterday in the previous sessions. About you have your traditional SAN storage options, you have storage tiering, you have storage spaces, you have the whole range of new solutions, SMB3. What storage solutions are you going to use? How are you going to use them? And how are you going to bill your customers for those services? Just going back for a sec, one other key area is security. When you provision your users, are you going to use Windows Azure Pack? Are you going to use your third-party control panel vendor? Are you using AD authentication? Are you using a SQL table to authenticate against? Are you using some other method for security? And also security of your customers' VMs. Are they going on dedicated LANs? Are they going on shared LANs? How are you going to do that isolation? So we have some traditional and some cloud-optimized, cost-effective options that we're going to run through now. So traditionally, you would have non-converged traditional storage and networking. You would have isolated silos of network and storage, and you would have no real convergence across them. The traditional storage and network is handled at your hardware layer. Okay, your physical network would be doing VLAN IDs. Your storage you would be managing through whichever storage application or management solution you had, whether it was NetApp, EMC, whatever it was. You'd have your own little software that you'd have to go and run to create LUNs and volumes and everything else. So some of the pros for that cyber scenario is the potential to deliver the highest level performance, speed, and uptime. Okay, a little bit harder to manage, okay, because you had to have two different interfaces. You'd have your hypervisor interface to create VMs, you'd have a different interface to do your storage, a different interface to do your networks. With the new converged solutions that we're talking about, we're sharing a network topology across all your customers. So we're not having to do isolation with physical VLAN IDs. We can do it at the virtual or software layer. We're able to do multiple different types of storage solutions, whether it's SMB3, SAN, Windows-based scale-out file clusters, storage spaces. We have a whole range of things that we can manage through the System Center suite of products. So you could have SCVMM managing your storage as well as your network configurations. We're also talking about the flexibility that some of the solutions that we've looked at cover. SMB3, we no longer have to configure iSCSI targets or virtual fiber channel configurations on the host. We could just point them to an SMB share. So some of the cons are that some of those storage solutions that we're looking at which use commodity disk potentially aren't going to give you the same performance you would get out of your SAN storage where you're using SAS and SSD, okay, on highly powerful SAS storage or SSD storage where we have multiple different solutions built into your SAN. But again, comes down to what is your requirement from your customers? Do they need SSD? Do they need SATA? Can they live on commodity disk or do they need really high-performing disk? So a typical non-converged environment, you have your teamed networks for interfaces for your load balancing. We have our volume 1 to volume N. We have our Hyper-V cluster with our fiber channel iSCSI connectivity back to your volumes and your SAN-based storage. In a converged environment, we have our Hyper-V cluster, we have our volumes, we have our converged network architecture, okay? So we don't have to isolate physically the traffic. We can actually just have the traffic go over whichever network adapters we feel like they need to. We have our volumes, and then we have our SAN-based storage. We then start looking at converged with SMB3, where we have our Hyper-V cluster still up the top. We have our teamed NICs. In this scenario, we've got RDMA to give us faster throughput to our shares on our SMB storage. And then we have our file cluster, which has the different types of storage behind it, which we're presenting through storage spaces. So that could be SAN disk, it could be shared SAS, it could be a whole range of different solutions. So when we do a non-converged pattern, we're talking about having different networks for everything. Okay, so you'd have a physical network for storage. You'd have a physical network for your VM traffic and management and things like that. So some of the pros are we get a fairly good capacity through that because we're isolating our traffic. We're making sure that specific adapters and things are doing specific roles. Some of the cons are that we have fairly expensive processes in place. We also have expensive hardware in place. Okay. Some of the considerations you need to think about are how can I best utilize the infrastructure I have? So some of the things we discussed yesterday and in earlier sessions were how do we deal with and how do we deliver some of our live migration traffic? Some of the options we went through yesterday was using fiber channel for live migrations. And when we had some discussions during breaks and things, some people had never actually even thought that they could use their fiber channel network that way. Okay? So there's a whole range of network capabilities that we can do in a converged model that a lot of you aren't using today in your non-converged model. So with non-converged, we have our Windows Server supporting features. So we still have our Hyper-V extensible switch. We still have support for all your SRIOV networks, support for the 4K physical disks, diskless network booting with iSCSI software targets, QoS, NIC teaming, failover, IPsec offloading. And then from a storage perspective, we're able to do increased virtual memory and dynamic memory. We have our virtual machine guests with clustering enhancements with fiber channel passing through to the virtual machines. We have offloaded ODX. We also have virtual machine storage enhancements with the VHDX capabilities in R2. And we also have encrypted cluster volumes. So some of the other features that we've added is increased VP and LP ratios, cluster-aware updating, as well as data center bridging. In our converged network pattern, we're able to reduce the costs of delivering strong SLAs, okay? If we're looking at combining and converging our networks into one platform, so for example, in this environment, we've got converged Ethernet switches where all of our traffic is going through the same set of switches, okay? And our storage, our network traffic, everything's going through the same set of switches. So instead of having a separate network for one thing, separate network for another, we've converged those networks into one. We have less complex infrastructure because we've only got one platform to manage. We have LAN traffic that can interfere with storage traffic, okay? So we haven't isolated the two networks totally. Doesn't typically provide the same QoS as non-converged, okay? It's a bit harder to manage network traffic and storage traffic and everything else if they're going across the same adapters. We have fewer switches and NICs that are required though, so we can get away with a few less NICs. So unlike having to need the 8 NICs that I was talking about yesterday, if you want to be able to have true isolated performance metrics and QoS on each storage network and VM network and live migration networks. So we're not able to deliver that true QoS that we have when we isolate the networks. When we start looking at the storage units must provide logical physical isolation. So we're really reliant then on the LUNs and the volumes to do the isolation. We're also establishing VLANs and setting up QoS for storage as well through that interface, okay? So you're gonna have to rely on the Windows hosts and the networking on the hosts to do that QoS. And one of the other side effects is that we must have switches that can support enhanced Ethernet to get the throughputs that we're talking about. So if you're going to use RDMA technology, you need to make sure the switches can cope with that RDMA technology. So the supporting features that we are still able to deliver in that converged network is we can still have our Hyper-V extensible switches, we can still support SRIOV and 4K drives, we can do diskless network booting, we can still do QoS. We also have, but with the QoS, we're doing minimum bandwidth sharing. We can also do NIC teaming. We can still do IPsec. We can still do all the same storage solutions that we were talking about earlier. And the other features are still the same with data center bridging, cluster aware updating, the VLP, the VP and LP ratios are still there. Converged with SMB, we're looking at a lower cost of ownership model. Okay, we're talking about having our Windows Server cluster sitting on the left there. We have our scale-out file servers, which are sitting in front of either locally attached shared SAS or potentially your existing SAN network. Okay, so again, you would have your cluster shared volumes, which are attached to that file-out cluster. That scale-out file server would then present those volumes as an SMB share that your Hyper-V host would connect to. So we still have the same sort of functionality. Some of the additional functions that we get when we use an SMB converged network is the SMB multi-channel. Okay, we kick in SMB multi-channel. We can do encrypted cluster volumes, and we're also using storage spaces. okay? When we use the SAS attached storage, we're now able to do storage spaces and deliver some of the benefits with storage tiering and storage spaces that aren't available in some of the other solutions. We also have the ability to do data deduplication, but again, only on specific workloads like VDI or your VM libraries or file shares. So some of the compute infrastructure decisions you need to think about are you building for a multi-tenant private public cloud, or are you building for private clouds? Okay, they're two very different environments that you're building. Okay, a private cloud, you need to make sure you have potential dedicated resources. We see some service providers, when they do dedicated private cloud, they actually set aside specific physical hosts to a customer. Okay, so are you going to go to the point when you do private cloud where you give them dedicated physical hardware? Or are you going to do private cloud where you say, well, you know what, no, you're going to be sitting on our shared hardware, but we're going to give you a dedicated set of resources. So you will have a dedicated reserve pool of storage, RAM, network capability. And then you have your public cloud, where are you going to do the same sort of model where you can give a customer a pool of resources? Or are you just going to say, here's a plan for a 1 gig server, here's a plan for a 2 gig server, and here's a plan for a 4 gig server, an 8 gig server, etc. And they'll only have plans that they can pick from. They can't create an unlimited number of VMs or set up their own configurations on those VMs for CPU, RAM, and storage. So there's a whole range of flexible options you have there. And depending on which model you pick, will have some impact on the hardware design. But the biggest impact's going to be around your provisioning and billing componentry. And what are your desired SLAs and workloads you're going to be putting on the system? Okay, is majority of your workloads going to be web servers or terminal servers? Or are you going to have a lot of SQL servers, Exchange servers, things that have a lot of database backends or a high volume of transactions? They're the things that are going to drive some of the decisions you make around storage and your network layer. We're also going to be talking about what workloads and servers and sizing are you going to support? Okay, how are you going to cope if a customer comes to you and says, I have a VM and I need 64 gig of RAM? Are you going to have the ability to have them on your shared infrastructure? Are you going to have hosts that can handle 64 gig of RAM? Are you going to have hosts that are 196 gig of RAM? Are you going to have hosts with 256 gig of RAM? Is your total... When you've done your cost analysis or return on investment analysis, are you just buying two CPU proc boxes with 96 gig of RAM? So how does that impact your buying decisions on the sizes the customers are going to come to you with? Okay, we've done a lot of work with some service providers, and some service providers, because of the purchase pricing and everything else, they've settled on a two CPU, one RU box that has 96 gig of RAM, because that's where they feel that it's more cost effective to buy lots of those little servers instead of going out and buying two or four RU boxes that have a lot more procs and a lot more RAM capacity. So you really need to evaluate, where are you sitting in the market? What is your target customer base? And what does that mean from a hardware perspective? Do you have to go from one RU boxes to two RU boxes just to make sure you can cover capacity requirements? Or if you're using blades, size of blades. Are you going half-height blades, full-height blades, depending on the vendor that you're with? Some people don't have the choice of half or full-height blades. Okay? And then you've also got to look at, well, if I go the half-height blades, my network throughput's less than if I go full-height blades. So you really need to think about those processes and design structures when you're going through your build process. And are we leveraging existing infrastructure? Are you taking your existing platform and upgrading it to the new platform? Or are you going to be building a new platform that sits in side by side with your new existing platform? We've done a lot of mixing with customers where they have an environment where they may buy two new servers to start off the build, and then as we migrate VMs over to the new infrastructure, we repurpose existing hardware. So you really need to decide on pretty early on what model you're going down. Are you going totally new infrastructure and retiring the old one, or are you going to do new build and then repurpose hardware as we go? Compute architecture, as I said, server versus blades. I'm not going to go into the pros and cons of both today, because that's going to be dependent on vendors and everything else that you pick. Okay? All the vendors have pros and cons as well. Microsoft multipathing. If you're not using multipath for your storage, please do. All right. As soon as you lose a path, you can be in very big trouble, especially in a cluster. We also are looking at consistent device naming. Okay? One of the worst things we've experienced is when we go into a customer and they've had changes of staff, and 1 minute you've got servers that are just called DC1, for example, and then you look at their DC number 3 and 4, and it's called, an example would be customer A DC-01. So you've gone from a three-letter naming convention to something that's about 8 characters long. And then we have some customers that go to a 20 naming convention, and then you go, yeah, but the NetBIOS name doesn't match. All right? So you really need to keep in mind the naming conventions, pick it up front and stick to it, okay? And the recommendation is also around naming of VMs, so you'll have a VM name and the computer name. Make sure that they try and match, okay? The last thing you want to do is have a VM name in Hyper-V that says this server is a DC, and then when you log on the computer is actually a Link server, okay? Make sure that you try and match up VM names and computer names. Failover clustering, highly recommend you use cluster-aware updating. It is going to make your life easier. You don't have to manually patch cluster nodes. It automatically does that for you. Cluster shared volumes, version 2, is much more stable than what we've seen in previous versions. BitLocker, are you needing encrypted clustered shared volumes? Do you need to encrypt the storage that your VMs are sitting on? Do your customers need encryption on that storage? And depending on your customer base, will dictate that. If you've got government organizations hosting on your infrastructure, depending on the government organization, especially if they're military-based or financial, you'll probably need encryption on your storage. So keep that in mind when you're doing your architecture and design around encryption as well. So there is a slight performance hit. It's not a massive performance hit, but there is a slight performance hit because you are encrypting and things like, there is some overhead there.
Management-wise,
there's not a lot different. It's just, is it encrypted or not encrypted? It's pretty much just a configuration thing at the start. Hyper-V application monitoring. Are we going to be monitoring the applications that we sit on our infrastructure? And how do we do the monitoring of our Hyper-V? Are you going to be using Ops Manager? Do you have another monitoring system? How is that going to handle the new platform and software that we're running? Virtual machine failover prioritization. Are you going to rate your servers based on customer importance to your organization? Okay. Are you going to prioritize the VMs that from the customers that pay you more? Or are you going to have a process where you say, you know what, all VMs are just as important as each other, and we're just going to fail them over as quickly as possible? We're not going to worry about the order. It's really critical, though, that if you do have high SLAs, you do prioritize those VMs. So failover cluster design depends on the workloads that you're going to be putting on there. Okay? We have a virtual machine on a single large CSV. So I've had a lot of discussions with a lot of service providers, and you can debate it for a very long period of time, around, do I have one big CSV or do I have lots of smaller CSVs? Okay? There are pros and cons to both. If you have just one large CSV with one large volume and you're just putting all of your, or two volumes on that large CSV, if all you're doing is putting VMs on there, okay, some of the things you need to think about is What happens if I lose that LUN or that CSV volume? Okay, am I going to be affecting all of my customers? When we look at, and also, what happens if I have customers that need encryption and other customers that don't want encryption? Okay, with one large CSV, it's a bit hard to turn on encryption for some and non-encryption for others. Okay, it's pretty much you encrypt or you don't encrypt. When we start looking at virtual machines on multiple CSVs, we then have a higher management function because you have to start managing where do VMs go. Do these VMs go on this CSV? Do they go on that CSV? How do I deal with it? So you really have to also take into account the workloads, okay? If you're going to be doing a lot of SQL workloads, you're not going to want one big clustered shared volume, all right? You're going to want multiple clustered shared volumes because where are you going to put, which RAID disk is your databases going on? If you have one big CSV, how are you putting your log files on a RAID 1 and your databases on a RAID 5 or RAID 10? Okay, so you need to start taking that into account as well, is it's not just about, oh yeah, I just want to present all my storage in as small a number of CSVs as possible so it's easier to manage. It's, well, what workloads are going on there? What are the disk requirements of each of those workloads? Also, you may have a lot of VDI and you may have other workloads that aren't VDI. If you're going to be doing VDI workloads, you're going to want a cluster shared volume that's deduped. You can't put your other workloads on a deduped volume. So there's going to be pros and cons to all the different options. But again, most of the time we see most customers deploying multiple CSVs. Okay, it's very hard unless you have the same workloads across all your customers to just go the large CSV volume option. So the question is, I've got a NetApp. NetApp has dedupe built into the storage. Can I use that deduplication for non-VDI workloads? The answer is Microsoft doesn't support VM workloads on deduplication volumes. Okay? So from a Microsoft perspective, the first thing that's going to happen when you ring support is Microsoft's going to tell you to put the VM on non-dedupe storage. Okay? So if you have an issue with a VM that is sitting on deduped storage that is not handled at the Microsoft layer, it's handled at your NetApp layer or one of the other layers, you will have to go back to your storage vendor for support because it's your storage vendor is doing the deduplication. So if you have a corruption of the storage, okay, so if the NetApp deduplication, for example, corrupts one of your VHDX files, okay, who are you going to call for support? No, you need to think about that when you do your design, okay? Is NetApp going to give me, or whoever the storage vendor is, are they going to support me when or if their deduplication process affects the VHDX files I'm storing on it? Okay, who's going to give me that support? Because that's the biggest question you're going to have. Okay, it's not a technical reason why we can't put it on deduplication. It's who is going to support it when it goes wrong. Okay, if you trust that your storage vendor is going to assist you and has a way for uncorrupting your VHDX file, and you're happy to deal with that process, go for it. But again, I'm just repeating, Microsoft doesn't trust their use or support deduplication on the Windows platform. Okay, so again, it becomes a storage vendor issue that you'll have to discuss with them. Personally, I don't use deduplication storage in any of our designs for production workloads. Whether it's at the storage layer or whether we're using Microsoft SMB and doing deduplication. Why is that? Because I've had bad experiences with deduplication technology from storage vendors. No, we're not buying the storage. But again, it comes down to reliability, stability, and who you're happy to trust with supporting you through the processes if something goes wrong. Okay? And again, every storage vendor has a different solution. Their solutions have different support matrices and things like that. So you really need to have that discussion with your storage vendor if that's the level you're going to do the deduplication at. Because again, some of them have multiple redundancy solutions built into their dedupe. Some don't do that very well. Cluster shared volumes, again, you may have one. Normally, we would recommend that you would have a cluster shared volume to put your OS drives on, and then potentially a different cluster shared volume to store your data on. And then if we look at SQL transaction servers, you would also probably potentially have a CSV for your log files. Okay, because they all have different RAID and disk requirements and disk I/O requirements. Network decisions. 1 gig versus 10 gig. Okay, that's a pretty big difference. Okay, you're going to get to see a massive performance difference between those two environments. Okay, again, comes down to, are you using existing infrastructure? Are you buying new infrastructure? Highly recommend if you're doing it, do 10 gig. Okay? We've done deployments with customers with 1 gig. It all's functional, but it's a performance decision. Okay? If you want to take 5 minutes to do a deployment, or do you want to take 20 to 30 minutes to do a deployment? That's the sort of time difference we're talking about. Okay? If you're deploying 2 or 3 gig VMs, it's not a big problem. But if you're going to be building and moving around 200 gig, 300 gig, 400 gig VMs, okay, a 1 gig network's not really going to do a great job at that, okay, because it is going to take a long time to either live migrate it, it's going to take a long time even if you shut it down and try and copy it across the wire to another host, it's going to take time, okay. A 10 gig network's going to do it much faster. Converged versus non-converged comes down to, again, cost. What existing infrastructure do you have? Are we building new? Are we using existing infrastructure? Do I already have a fiber channel network? Do I have a 10 gig network? Am I going to keep them separated? Do I want all my traffic going across the one switch or one set of switches and routers? Am I going to do virtual networking at the hypervisor layer, or am I going to leave my networking at the physical layer? Okay, that's another decision you need to make. The biggest discussion point is who's going to manage that network, okay? It's not just about, I want to go down the VM network path, and it's not just, oh, no, I want to stick with my physicals. It's, at the moment, how many of you have your Windows guys managing your Cisco switches or routers? Anyone? No. One? How many of you have your network guys managing Windows servers? Anyone? One person, or are they the same people? The same people, yeah. So one of the discussions we have when we go in and start designing things with service providers or enterprise customers is you have your Windows team, which look after the Windows platform. You have your network team, which are normally your Cisco or HP or Dell, whoever it is, looking after the network equipment. Okay? When we do a virtual network, who's going to be responsible for that? Do your Windows team know enough about VLAN IDing, subnets, to be able to deal with it? Does your network team have enough skills to be able to use Windows servers and PowerShell to manage virtual networks? So where is the crossover going to occur? Are you going to have to still keep two different teams? Are you going to converge your teams together? So it's not just about physical resources, about I have my physical switches and I have my virtual network. It's about who manages them. And how does that cross over? Who's going to manage my gateway device so that I can communicate between my VM and my physical network? They're the things you need to decide, as well as not just, yes, I want to go virtual networks. And then you go to your network team and go, yep, we're doing virtual networks. Here's the Windows PowerShell scripts. Good luck. Okay? You need to have that conversation with the teams in your environment when you do the design. How are you doing IP address management and automation? Are you going to use IP pools, which we're going to go through in a little while when we go through Virtual Machine Manager? Are you going to still statically assign IPs? How many IPs do you need to assign to a customer? Are you giving them external IPs so they directly just connect straight to their server? Are you having to create VIP IPs? Do you need to put them through load balancers? How do you do the assignment of IPs against your load balancer and then IPs against your servers? You need to think about that IP management process, especially when you give customers the ability to go, I've just created 10 VMs. Now, where do I get my IPs from? Is it a DHCP server? Do you statically assign them? Does your control panel assign the IPs? How do you assign the IPs that you need to that customer? So some network architecture considerations. Are we going to have a hierarchy where we have core aggregation and access? Am I going to have a flat network? Am I just going to have all my servers plugged into a switch? Those switches are going to have all trunks enabled on them, on every port. And then I'm going to rely totally on the Windows hypervisor platform to go do either physical VLAN IDs or virtual VLAN IDs. Network performance and low latency. Am I going to do virtual machine queues? Am I going to offload certain tasks like SRIOV or other mechanisms to my hardware? Or is that going to impact my ability to do virtual networks? Do I have enough network adapters? Am I going to be doing TCP chimney offloads? Am I going to be IPsec task offloading? Am I going to need QoS? Network teaming. Some customers, we've had discussions around, some customers want to do NIC teaming instead of MPIO. They just want to team the NICs and say, you know what, I've got multiple paths, I'm just going to team the NICs. I don't want to use MPIO. Not necessarily the recommended way to go, but again, you've got choices you need to make. Highly recommend you go down the MPIO path. It's a better failover process for storage. Do I need to do guest virtual NIC teaming? Do I need to team NICs inside my VMs? Do customers have the requirement to team inside their VM? And what's the benefit to them of doing that? NIC teaming features and compatibility. Most of your NICs in your servers will be able to be teamed by the Microsoft technology. We haven't come across any that haven't been able to, but that doesn't mean that there isn't some weird network adapter that you may have that's from some vendor that I haven't dealt with in the past. So a comparative of 10 gig versus 1 gig, okay, same design. The only difference is the speed. And instead of having to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 NICs in your 1 gig Ethernet environment, we have 2 in our 10 gig environment. Okay, that's a lot less cabling. It's a lot less management of actual physical NICs and things like that. So there's some pretty significant benefits to going down the 10 gig path. Storage considerations. What availability are you offering on your platform? Are you having a storage solution that can deliver 5 nines, 4 nines, 3 nines, 2 nines, 1, 0? What level of SLA are you able to deliver on that storage platform? Converged, non-converged storage networks, are you going to use SMB3? Are we going to have existing infrastructure? So are you going to have a mix? Are you already got iSCSI networks? Have you already got fiber channel networks? And how are you going to integrate that if you want to also add your storage spaces type of storage on top of that? So are you going to use just your existing storage? Are you going to add new types of storage? Are you going to do storage tiering? You need to make those decisions. And what sort of network redundancy are you putting in? Are you putting MPIO in with 2 NICs, 3 NICs? Are you going to be doing NIC teaming to your storage? Some of the disk architecture decisions you need to think about: SATA, SAS, SSD, hybrid drives, advanced formatting of 4Ks, disk compatibility. We're seeing a lot of customers work or service providers go through their current workloads. If I assess my workloads, am I seeing 90% of customers that could just sit on SATA? Do I really need SSD? Do I really need SAS drives? What speed drives do I need? We had a scenario where we went into a customer's environment. We're building a totally brand new platform. That customer just bought brand new kit, okay? Brand new servers, brand new disks, okay? We're building a Windows cluster, okay? We had the customer, we'd done some tests of just transferring files before we even done clustering anything else, just straight copying, okay? They had one server with 10K drives. They had another server with 15K drives, okay? We were seeing over 30 megabits a second difference between a 10 and a 15K drive machine, okay? So you need to not only take into account the type of storage, but the speed of the storage. So if I go SAS drives, do I need 10K, 15K spindles? What do I need speed-wise as well as just the type of storage, okay? There's no use putting in SATA at 5,200 RPM instead of 7,500, okay? There's big impacts on that. So yes, you may be saving yourself a couple of thousand dollars by buying the slightly slower disk, but what is the performance hit you're taking in reality? Okay? It can be a pretty big difference. So don't just look at the price point. Please evaluate what the difference is going to be, because it may be worth spending the extra $1,000 at the start. Storage controller architecture, SATA 3, fiber channel, iSCSI, what sort of storage controller architecture are you going? Storage networks, fiber channel, iSCSI, fiber channel over Ethernet, InfiniBand, switch SAS. There's a whole range of solutions now that you can go down. Windows file services. Are you going to use storage spaces? Are you going to use REFS? Has anyone in the room actually deployed REFS yet? No? Did anyone in the room actually know that REFS existed before just then? 3 or 4 or 5 people? Okay. So make sure you evaluate what format. Am I going REFS, NTFS? What sort of formatting am I going to do on my volumes and partitions? Scale-out file server architecture, am I going to use file clusters and SMB for my storage? Stand and storage array decisions around data deduplication. Am I going to trust my third-party vendor who's supplying me my storage to use their deduplication technology doing production workloads? Am I going to do thin provisioning and trimming? Am I going to do volume cloning, snapshotting? Am I going to do storage tiering, and can the storage that I have do storage tiering in an automated fashion, or am I going to have to manually decide where VMs go? Storage management. Do I have something that in my kit at the moment that I can tie VMM or one of my other automated solutions into to create LUNs, manage LUNs and volumes? Does it have SMS capabilities? Does it have ODX capabilities? What are the capabilities and restrictions my storage will give me? Fabric management. So when we're looking at the fabric, we're talking about the whole fabric. We're talking compute, servers with CPU, RAM. Am I going 2 CPU boxes? Am I going 4 CPU boxes? Am I going 4-core, 6-core, 8-core, 12-core? What size CPUs am I putting in? How much RAM am I putting in my boxes? Am I going 96, 192, 256, 512, a terabyte, 4, 8? If you get 8 terabytes, please come and get me. I'll even come and work for you for a couple of hours for free. So please make sure you go through those design decisions. 10 gig networks, 1 gig networks. How many 10 gig network adapters do you need? How many 1 gig network adapters do you need? Storage, again, your storage arrays, your connectivity, and your networks, as well as your fabric management. Am I going to use Virtual Machine Manager, Orchestrator, Ops Manager? What am I going to use to manage and monitor my environments? Self-service. Am I giving customers access to the environment? Am I going to use Service Manager? Am I going to give customers App Controller? Am I going to give them Windows Azure Pack? Am I going to give them my third-party control panel to access and create VMs and deploy VMs and storage and networks on? reporting. How do I get the information out? How do I give customers reports on how their CPU and RAM's performing? How do I give them network statistics? How do I give them storage statistics and availability? How am I going to give them all of that information? And a lot of that we're going to go through later today as we go through our System Center products. But it's things that you need to start thinking about now. Logical architecture. Am I going to have one node, two node clusters, 10 node clusters, six node clusters? Am I going to not even cluster? Am I just going to have standalone hosts? What is my need? Do I need clustering? Do I need standalones? Am I going to have guest clustering? Do I need VMs that are clustered? Do I need to have service manager? Do I need to have ops manager? Do I need to have VMM? What am I managing? Am I just managing the Hyper-V platform? Or am I going to use VMM to manage all of my hypervisors? When we start looking at some of the scalability decisions, Virtual Machine Manager, one instance can manage 800 hosts or 25,000 virtual machines. That is a single instance of VMM. And you can have lots of instances, okay? But that is just from one Virtual Machine Manager. Whether it's standalone or clustered, that's what one of the limitations we have is. App Controller. App Controller is a product that we can support up to 250 virtual machines per virtual machine manager role. We're not seeing a lot of App Controller deployment in just service provider. An App Controller, as we're going to go through a little bit later, is really there to help customers manage on-premise and in the cloud solutions. Okay? It's not a tool that I would recommend that a service provider goes and deploys and gives it to the customer to just manage their cloud services. Okay? You would get the same sort of functionality, if not better, out of Windows Azure Pack. Ops Manager, 3,000 agents per management server. Okay? We don't need to cluster Ops Manager, we just put lots of Ops Manager servers in. Highly recommend you do agent management, okay? Agents per management group is around 15,000. If you do agentless management, okay, you minimize the number of machines you can manage through Ops Manager. Orchestrator, we can now do 50 concurrent runbooks per server, okay, which is a significant amount of runbooks, all right? And all we have to do to expand Orchestrator is just add additional servers. Service Manager, we can support up to over 20,000 computers through Service Manager, okay? So 20,000 either VMs or physical boxes we can manage through Service Manager. So think about all of the different services you need to manage. It's not just about, I just need to manage my physical box. It's about how am I going to manage my fabric, which is my CPU, my storage, my RAM, my networks. How am I going to manage and service my customers' requirements? Does your control panel or your help desk system at the moment give you the functionality you need? Do you need to look at something like Service Manager to give you some more assistance around ITIL processes and change management? Do I need resource optimization capabilities out of Ops Manager and VMM? Do I need SQL reporting? Do I need a backup solution? What is my backup solution? Am I going to go down DPM? Am I going to go use one of the other third-party vendors? Am I just going to rely on Windows backup and SQL backup? Recovery, am I using Hyper-V replica? Is that going to be my DR strategy? So some of the deployment options we have. Entry-level infrastructure as a service. Are you going to buy a third-party control panel vendor solution? Or am I going to deploy Windows Azure Pack? Do I need something to get me into the market today where I can use Windows Azure Pack today? Because I can just go get it, it's free, I can download it, install it. Is it going to do what I need it to do? It's going to do basic infrastructure as a service, but does it give me enough features and functions? Do I need to extend it, or do I need to go down the path of buying one? So for those that are looking to try and get to the market as quickly as possible, okay, Windows Azure Pack is probably going to be the quickest way to market, purely and simply because it's going to take you time to evaluate which third-party control panel vendor you're wanting to go with. Okay? You can deploy Windows Azure Pack without making any decisions today. Okay? But when we start looking at enterprise class infrastructure as a service, okay, we're really starting to look at third-party control panel vendors. So if we're targeting the medium to large enterprise customers that have a lot of complex requirements, okay, we're really starting to look at control panels like Extend ASP or Parallels or Ensem or Citrix. And then we really have the third option, which is infrastructure as a service with a custom control panel. Okay, whether you take the Windows Azure portal and modify it heavily, or whether you just build one from scratch and integrate with the SPF and APIs that we give you out of the box. Okay, we deal with customers that go with all three options. Okay, we've seen customers go just down the Windows Azure pack path. We've seen customers go down and go and buy Parallels or Extend and do the deployments. It all comes down to what functionality do you need to give your customers? What price point are you going to be happy with, okay? And do you have the development skills internally or a partnership with someone that does have those skills already to go? So some of the top 10 questions to ensure a successful POC, okay? So when you go back to your offices, okay, we're giving you the lab guides and things, but the things you need to think about when you're trying to deliver a successful POC are what product offerings are you trying to demonstrate? Are you doing just basic VM deployment? Are you trying to demonstrate automated processes where customers can go and deploy an AD server without having to do much touching of it? What are the critical outcomes that you need to make the POC successful? Do you just need to prove that Hyper-V works? Do you need to prove that Windows Azure Pack is going to be successful for you? Do you need to work with third-party vendors to make sure that you meet your outcomes because they have the customized capability that you need? Have you got sign-off from your management or customers that are involved in the POC on what will deem the POC a successful project? Okay? There's no use saying in a meeting that, yes, we're going to do this, this, and this. You need sign-off to say, yes, these are our targets. These are the requirements we need to meet to make this make a decision about whether this is successful or not successful. What third-party products are you integrating with? Do you have a third-party control panel that you need to work with in the POC environment? Do you have third-party backup vendors, storage vendors that you need to work with? Who are the vendors that are involved that you need to deal with? And whose responsibility is it to validate that the product works in a platform in your POC? Are you got commitment from your third-party vendor to spend resources with you to ensure that their product is compatible and functional? One of the biggest deciders you're going to have and issues you're going to have is, does my third-party vendor support the current products I'm trying to use? Do the vendors support 2012 R2? Do they only support 2012? Do they even support any of the 2012 products? Do they support SMB shares? Do they support cluster shared volumes? What product technology do they support? Is the hardware I am running my POC on adequate? This is the biggest problem we have when we work with customer service providers and trying to deliver proof of concepts and testing environments. Is the resources you get need to be adequate to meet the outcomes you're trying to achieve, okay? You don't want to handicap yourself by trying to do a Hyper-V cloud and do automation and deployments and have a 1 gig nick in each of the servers, okay? Because trying to provision a VM is going to take a long time. And if your outcome is to meet a fairly quick turnaround time, you're not going to achieve it, okay? Same as if you're really trying to achieve good disk throughput, there's no use just giving us a server that's got a 5,500 RPM hard drive in it, all right? You need to be realistic with your proof of concept hardware and make sure it matches the outcomes. You Use templates when you're deploying your POC, okay? When you build your first couple of servers up, you build your domain controllers, your VMM server, and then the rest of the servers you build, use VMM to deploy, because then you're going to have a consistent deployment for all those VMs. And are you allocating a fair dinkum amount of resources to the project? Okay? Do the resources you're putting into the project have the time to deliver the project? There's no point giving a guy in your office the job of building up the cloud environment when he keeps getting dragged away to do other projects. Okay? You need to make sure you allocate the correct resources to get it done and get it done properly. And if you don't have the correct skill set, make sure they have the resources available to help them get that skill set up and running.